Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
U.S. all cows and heifers are calved are at 38.1 million head, unchanged from 2025. Beef cows are at 28,450,000 head, down 200,000 from 2025. Whereas the milk cows are up 2.1% from 2025 at 9,650,000 head.
Travis Averill with USDA. That U.S. cattle inventory report released on Friday, again, fewer beef cows and a smaller calf crop, continue limiting rapid herd expansion. Now, also, in addition to that, USDA out with their cattle on feed report. U.S. feedlot inventories remained above last year on July 1st. Slower placements, record low June marketings, pointing to changing cattle supplies. USDA reporting 11.37 million head on feed. That's equal to 102% of the year earlier. June placements, 1.4 million head, or 97% of last year. Net placements, 1.35 million. And the marketings, 1.66 million head, also 97% of last year, and the lowest June total since the series began in 1996. Now, the larger inventory may keep Fed supplies available near term, but the reduced placements could tighten numbers later. Producers set to watch slaughter, pace, bases, replacement cost, and summer marketings, which ties into USDA announcing the resumption of limited Mexican livestock imports August 24th through Douglas, Arizona. It begins a phased reopening welcomed by cattle groups, but conditioned on continued New World screwworm safeguards. Every animal entering through reopened ports will receive a federal inspection. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins says the Arizona port will reopen first because neighboring Sonora has established animal health controls and remains distant from most active cases. Closest known detection, about 325 miles away. And Santa Teresa and Columbus, New Mexico, they could follow after USDA reviews the initial reopening. Mexican compliance, surveillance results, and changing disease risk. Imports may be paused again if audits or new cases indicate increased danger. Texas and Southwestern cattle raisers and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association supporting the measured approach, saying restored trade could normalize feeder cattle movement across the southern plains. Texas Ag Commissioner Sid Miller welcoming the decision, but argued closure lasted too long. Reopening could increase feeder supplies and ease some replacement costs, but disease protection remains the priority. Producers will watch inspections, sterile fly capacity, Mexican containment, and market reaction. And a large Kansas City wheat options position, adding to evidence that major traders are preparing for stronger grain prices. StoneX Senior Vice President of Ag Operations, P.J. Quaid, says wheat trade would normally attract attention without the enormous corn position dominating the market. And a trader reportedly exited about 7,000 of the September 730 calls and replaced them with 8 to 8.5 call spreads, which shows a new structure increasing exposure to a sharp rally while limiting gains above 850. Position could reflect expectations for tighter hard red winter wheat supplies. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express water wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express water wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express water wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
There's a lot going on right now in the world when it comes to freight.
Tom Beeney, Senior Vice President of Ocean Freight with StoneX.
Firstly, the Straits of Hormuz. Obviously, people are familiar with what's going on there. I think to make it very clear, the Straits of Hormuz is not in a normal situation. Vessels will go only in and out if they have security from either naval convoys or from governments that say that they are allowed to go in, and will cover them from an insurance perspective. And three, if the marine insurance market will actually give them coverage to go in and out. So essentially, for vessels going in and out, and we're nowhere near a normalization, particularly with the recent attacks on merchant ships. The second area we need to look at is the Red Sea, with the Houthis sending notices out to commercial shipping that if they load in Saudi Arabia, they will be seen as targets. And they have attacked ships in the past and have threatened to attack ships in the future. And that's one of the pipelines that is still open out of Saudi Arabia coming out of the Red Sea. So that essentially has a major impact on oil flows. Thirdly, obviously, as you've mentioned, what's going on in the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov. And that's of particular interest for the grain markets, because you've got Russia and Ukraine are major exporters of wheat, and Ukraine also of corn. And so we are looking at a situation right now where there have been literally hundreds of ships have been attacked in that area over the last few years, but very, very focused now on the last month, where Ukraine is attacking Russian vessels, and Russia is attacking the Ukraine infrastructure to export. So we could have a situation, I think primarily right now, we have a situation where ships that have not gone in to discharge or have not gone in to load will not go in under the current scenario. The main export port out of Russia, which is Novorossiysk, is still open and is still functioning during daylight hours. But again, under a shipping contract, you have a war risk clause, and those clauses will be enacted so that major vessel owners will not allow their ships to go in there unless they have a big security given to them by the authorities. And on the Ukraine side, the export, the grain export elevators for the deep sea ports in the Black Sea have been pretty well much devastated, so they're inoperable at this stage. And in any case, I don't think you'd find a commercial ship owner who really would go in there. So Ukraine is exporting using its overland rail, etc., to bring that grain as much as possible into Europe. So the Black Sea is not closed. The Bosphorus and Dardanelles, which is the strait you go through to get into the Black Sea, is fully open. I think a big change in that would be is if Novorossiysk, for a commodities perspective, is if the Ukrainians were successful in knocking out Novorossiysk as an export port.
And this is Agriculture Today.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Prime age labor force participation, so the people we consider sort of in their prime working years. Actually, we're doing really well here.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
Some of the growth in the economy, some of the investment in the economy, for prime age, we got 84%. But here's my problem. Labor force participation of those 55 and up has been crashing. There's lots of reasons to debate this and discuss this. Is this skill sets? Is it the adoption of technology? Is it the wealth effects of, you know, as asset prices have gone up so much, we have people able to retire early? It's a combination of everything. But these workers are often our most productive. So just understand, working age, prime working age people are actually doing really well working, being in the labor force. Those of us who are older, we've been disappearing like crazy, and we actually see that in our productivity numbers. All right, U.S. population age 65 and up. If you and I go back to 2011, 41 million. This year, I have 63 million. I'm one of these. I'm basically 64. Now, I understand, my wife and I are both 64, and I have a 4-year-old and a 10-year-old, so we're very optimistic about the future, or we're out of our minds. We all knew this was happening. So we did what to shore up the trust funds? We did what to basically incentivize our brothers and sisters to stay in the labor force if they wanted to? We had dozens of things. I've been here 16 years, and I've spent most of the time trying to get this place to actually deal with the reality of, let's save Social Security. Let's actually save Medicare. Let's do those things that help us grow. Let's adopt the technologies so we can crash the price of healthcare. And I've had some success on the edges. But I lose to the armies of lobbyists that are in the hallways here that lose their minds that we might change their business models. We're now borrowing about $90,000 every second. Today, we will borrow about $7 billion. The current burn rate so far this fiscal year, just this fiscal year, we're going to come in close to $2.3 trillion of borrowing. And yet we have higher interest rates. How long is the bond market going to keep saying we're going to finance you because how much of the benefits that our brothers and sisters who are older have earned, we're actually borrowing the money. Seniors per 100 workers. And actually, here's just the simple math. You remember how many of us sort of grew up and always hearing about, hey, you know, you got 23 people per retiree, and that's how we finance Social Security. I've shown some charts here where in the end of a decade from now, you have about 2.3. And it's this. In 2011, we had 21.9 seniors or working age folks per senior. Today, we actually are, that number has eroded, 47% increase in that change. It's almost a 50% change in that time, and it continue, and it's actually steepens. And part of the steepening isn't because we have more seniors, it's also because we have substantially fewer young people. 65 will continue to grow as a share of the population. So in 9 budget years, 21.4% of the population will be in their benefit ages. Our system wasn't prepared for this. In 26 months from now, I should have double checked the math. Over half the federal spending will go to those of us 65 and up. Not half of the tax receipts. Remember, if you're borrowing $2.3 trillion on top. But think about that.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers. Corn ethanol, we did see USDA adjust this down ever so slightly, and that's mainly because when you look at the past few years, what we have seen is a very slow sort of growth trend in the use of corn for ethanol. But as we look at the data, at least through the first half of 2026, that has sort of stabilized, maybe even tailed off just a little bit, hence we got USDA's little adjustment there. But we're still talking about very strong corn usage for biofuels, and where we're seeing a lot more interest is on the soybean side.
Iowa State ag economist Chad Hart.
We have seen a pickup, especially here again, as we move through the first few months of 2026, we have seen an increase, especially in vegetable oil use for, especially in this case, soybean oil use for renewable diesel, and that's expected to continue as we look throughout the rest of 2026 here. And so you've got these engines of basically it's the export side on the corn market and the biofuel side on the soybean market providing, if you will, the heavy lifting when it comes to the crop usage to help provide a little more support into the marketplace. And that support has translated into higher futures prices. Now, over the past couple of months, we had seen some weakness come in as the markets were trying to decide just how much was going to get planted this year and would we be able to chew through the big crops we produced last year. So we had seen some downward pressure build up, especially as we move through June into early July. But with these reports coming out, that helped resolve some of that uncertainty and has led to a little bit of a bounce up in prices here over the past week or so. Now, in this case, this was the prices as of close of day on July 10th. And with that, you know, you take an average basis off these futures market prices that are marked in green. That's how you get to those big black numbers on this slide. And that's these big black numbers are the season average price estimates you get from the futures market. And we can compare them to what USDA had on those original tables I had at the front of the presentation here. So USDA was projecting $4.15 a bushel for old crop and $4.40 for new crop. As we look at futures market right now, it's a little more optimistic again. It's saying $4.22 as we look old crop and $4.57 as we look at new crop there. So we are seeing some better prices on the board than what USDA has anticipated here. Again, sort of leaning on this possibility of we are seeing usage that still is remaining strong here. And as we're getting into the growing season now, like I say, I think those concerns about weather events impacting production are starting to build prices back up. A little bit of a weather premium coming back in again. When it comes to the soybean side of the market, again, a little optimism here. USDA was 1040 old crop, 1140 new crop, and as you can see here, the markets are 1048 and 1157. So we're seeing that same sort of pattern for both corn and soybeans here, where the markets are a little more optimistic than USDA is at the current moment. And again, for the same reasons, that usage is growing. In this case, it's biofuel. Plus concerns about, like I say, here in central Iowa, we've had a lot of water come down over the first couple of weeks of July, where we know other parts of the country have been facing some really hot and dry conditions. So that may be starting to pull down on production as we're looking forward. And like I say, leading to a little bit of a weather premium building back into the market.
It's Agriculture Today.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express Water Wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express Water Wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express Water Wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The Farm Bill is always a very interesting sort of, you know, agreement, an interesting coalition that historically has been very bipartisan between the folks who produce the food and the folks who need different or better access to the food.
Sigrid Johannes is with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
So you've got 20% of the bill that really focuses on production agriculture, and you've got about 80% of the bill that focuses on nutrition programs. And it's typically a bright spot in an otherwise pretty gridlocked or unproductive Congress, because it matters to everybody. Everybody has to eat every single day. Everybody needs fuel and fiber. Everybody is being touched by agriculture every single day in this country, even if they're one of the 98% of Americans who don't work in production agriculture. But the Farm Bill has taken a very interesting path here. As you mentioned, we're about 3 years behind schedule now. And as you mentioned, Tony, we do have one version that has passed the House with bipartisan support that sailed through that chamber in late April. And NCBA was really happy with that version of the bill. To be honest, we got everything in there that we needed, and we got nothing that we don't. And that's exactly where we wanted to land. Now, on the Senate side, as of a couple weeks ago, we're in a very different environment. The Senate, Chairman John Bozeman from Arkansas on the Senate Agriculture Committee, he's decided not to take up the House bill. They want to do their own. So if this goes according to plan, the Senate would pass their version, and then they would have to go to a conference process to reconcile the House version and the Senate version and come up with a final product that could go to the president's desk. But before they get there, we're at the baby steps part of this, because the Senate just put out their draft text. It's not even the sort of final yet, but they put out draft bill text a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I got to say, Tony, I think the fundamentals in there are great. There's a lot in there that, again, just hits basics on some of those risk management, conservation programs, animal health, the basics that we in the cattle sector look to a farm bill process for. They didn't take a whole lot of risks, though, with that draft. They took a pass on all of the things that could be controversial. They didn't weigh in on Prop 12. For what it's worth, on the crop side, they also didn't touch on year-round E15 access. They really were pretty scrupulous to avoid anything that might be thorny or difficult. And that's certainly one path, right? That's a choice you could make. But the result is that there's not a whole lot of things in that bill that are moving the needle in a big or unexpected way. And what has also sort of reared its head in the Senate process is that you've got this new group out, AMPA, which is being backed by a whole bunch of animal activist folks, Wayne Pacelle chief among them, that is dumping tens of millions of dollars into Senate races right now across the country to discourage them, folks on committee, from supporting that Prop 12 fix. The Prop 12 fix is not included in the draft text of this Senate bill. What could happen is getting it added as an amendment. But we've seen a ton of pressure, like I said, from this activist group over the last couple weeks to discourage folks, to the point even that you saw Senator Roger Marshall from Kansas just up and give up, for lack of a better phrase, and decide to flip on that and not support the Prop 12 fix anymore, even though Kansas Farm Bureau, Kansas Livestock Association, everybody else was urging him the opposite. And so even though we're happy with the draft as it stands now, I think we've got some pretty serious questions about where it goes from here. The path there is far from safe and far from certain, as far as we're concerned, when you've got farm state Republicans on the committee, like Roger Marshall, who decide to, you know, side with activist money over the producers in their own state. That doesn't bode well for getting this across the finish line.
It's Agriculture Today.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit TexasCorn.org and become a member today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
U.S. all cows and heifers at calved are at 38.1 million head, unchanged from 2025. Beef cows are at 28,450,000 head, down 200,000 from 2025. Whereas the milk cows are up 2.1% from 2025 at 9,650,000 head.
Travis Averill with USDA's National Ag Statistics Service.
The chart in the bottom left-hand corner for July 1, U.S. beef cows from 2006 to current is similar to the all cattle cycle that I provided on the previous slide. To the right is the chart of the July 1st of the United States milk cow since 2006. Over the last 21 years, milk cow inventory has ranged from 9.13 million to as high as 9.65 this year. Just a note to have point of reference, this is the largest July 1 milk cow inventory since 1993. On July 1st, the United States all heifers 500 pounds and over are at 14.7 million head, up 100,000 head from 2025. The beef replacement heifers and milk replacement heifers are up 100,000 head at 3.8 million and 3.6 million from 2025. Other heifers are down 1.4% from 2025 at 7.3 million head. At the bottom is U.S. all heifers chart for July 1 from 2006 to present. This mirrors similar to the all cattle chart that I shared earlier along with all cows. Next, we have the July 1, 2026 steers 500 pounds and over at 13.9 million head, up 0.7% from 2025, whereas both the bulls 500 pounds and over and the calves weighing less than 500 pounds are unchanged from last year at 1.9 million and 25.6 million head, respectively. At the bottom is the chart illustrating the steers, bulls, and calves for July 1 over the last 21 years. Steers are in blue, bulls are orange, and the calves are gray. Takeaway from this chart is the variability in the calves over the years. Next, we have the U.S. calf crop for the first half of 2026 at 23.9 million head, down 1.6% from previous year. As a percentage of the total calf crop, the first half accounts for 73.5%. That is down 0.1% from 2025. 8.6 million calves are expected to be born in the second half of 2026. That is down 1.1% from last year. As a percentage of the total calf crop, the second half accounts for 26.5%. The preliminary annual calf crop for 2026 is at 32.5 million head, down 1.5% from last year. The chart provides the annual calf crop since 2006. Just a reminder, the 2026 value is a preliminary estimate, and we will further review the calf crop in January 2027. Next, we have the U.S. cattle on feed on July 1, 2026, with comparisons to last year. Feedlots with a capacity of 1,000 head or more are 11,370,000 head, up 1.5% from 2025. As a percentage of the total cattle on feed, this group accounted for 85.1% of all cattle on feed. That is down 0.5% from last year's inventory. Feedlots with a capacity of less than 1,000 head are at 1,830,000 head. That is down 46,000 from 2025. This group accounted for 13.9% of all cattle on feed. The chart at the bottom for July 1, all cattle on feed from 2006 to 2026. You can see the lowest inventory was in 2009 at 11.6 million head, and the highest was at 13.6 in 2019 and 2020.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.